Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome to the Randomly Generated History Club, where three non-historians pick a year at random and try to learn things about it. I'm Anna, and I'm here with my two friends, Will and Ant.
Hello.
Hi.
This week, we are talking about the year 1102. One of the greats. I say that every time. One of these days, we're going to get
one of the first few years in the 1100s.
First few years of the 12th century, I think. I'll be the controversial one and say that. Could we get our three-word previews of what we're each talking about? Will, I'll start with you.
King's sulky son.
King's sulky son. That's a possessive king.
Correct.
Okay. Good. Ant?
Heavy horses.
Heavy horses.
Yeah.
Is that like hungry hippos?
It is exactly like hungry hippos, but they're heavy.
Okay. My three words are Lord Battlemaster or Lord Battlemaster.
That's pretty good. That's amazing.
Or Battle Lord Master. Anyway, it works. And before we dive in, I have, it's not really a correction, but it is a follow-up because I was very curious last week when you talked about the Battle of
Brunabur.
At one point you mentioned Dingsmere.
Yes, I did.
And there was nobody knew what Dingsmere was.
We did not.
So I've looked it up.
Uh-huh.
No one does really know.
Great follow-up.
Yeah, and a follow-up. No, but this tickled me. So as Dingsmere does not correspond to any known place name, its meaning has caused considerable controversy. Apart from Sea of Ding, suggestions have included Dingy Sea, Sea of Noise, and Wetland of the Thing.
Wetland of the Thing.
Yeah. Of the Thing.
Of the Thing. The thing is the Norse word for an assembly. Or some sort of Scandinavian language, Danish maybe, for an assembly. So
not like a disembodied hand.
No, exactly. But I do like to think that after they lost this battle, they had to sail across the wetland of the Thing.
Yeah, that's good.
We have absolutely no further clarity than we did last week.
Have we gotten further away from it?
Probably.
My job here is done. Today, I'm back in my favorite period of history, Moorish Spain.
Yay.
So things are about to pop off. I'm going to take
You just can't get enough of it, can you?
I cannot get enough of it.
You might say it's a bit Moorish.
Oh, nice. That's very good.
Excellent.
When I first moved here, sidebar, maybe we cut all this out. Moorish, M-O-R-E-I-S-H, is not a word that exists in English, in American English, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And so I kept seeing it in relation to food. And I was like, are these people so stupid that they're just spelling Moorish wrong?
Oh, okay. And you thought that like... You know, Cadbury's cream eggs were from
yeah,
an Arabic empire
first
somewhere.
The thing I saw it on was like a pot of hummus. I was like, okay, I guess.
And it's kind of Moorish.
Yeah, it's Moorish and Moorish. Anyway, I'm not talking about hummus today as a first. I'm going to take the unusual step of talking about someone who was already dead by 1102. But there is a reason I'm talking about him. And also, he's just too interesting and important not to talk about. So I couldn't take the risk of waiting for the year 1099 to come up. So we're going to cover him today. And he's a man named Rodrigo Diaz de Vivar, better known as...
El Cid.
El Cid.
Oh, I'm so... This has been my favorite movie of all time.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
It is so good.
Is it? Really? It is,
yeah,
genuinely. It's like Charlton Heston.
Yes, so good. Okay. It is about 7 hours long, but it's great.
Well, good, because so is my bit today.
Can I clarify? So he this is a man who died in 1099.
Yeah.
And we're covering... Sorry, just... Okay, sorry, I'm a bit confused. So... We're covering the year 1102, of course,
yep.
which is 3 years later.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Good. Sounds good. Carry on.
All your doubts will have been erased by the end of my section.
Okay, great.
Probably. Okay. So El Cid. Ants heard of him. Will, have you heard of him?
Nope.
Okay, great. He was quite a famous knight in medieval Spain. He's still celebrated as a Spanish folk hero and national icon, but interestingly, he exists in this time of transition for the Iberian Peninsula. So the Caliphate of Cordoba falls in 1031, and Muslim Spain fractures into a bunch of kingdoms called taifas. They're basically smaller, independent principalities, but without any overarching ruler. But Christian Spain was also not united, and it had different states like Castile and Aragon. And I literally wrote in my notes in all caps, not Aragorn. So those states were perpetually vying for supremacy and at various points attempting to unite and that sort of thing. So basically, if you're a sword for hire, this is a fantastic time for you.
I would have done so well.
You would have done
so well. No one's hiring my sword right now. It's been a dry season for sword.
I think your sword is on a few blacklists, actually.
I'm talking about a literal sword. This is not... We're not talking about my penis.
Oh.
Just FYI.
Okay.
But that is also coincidentally for hire.
I have seen your sword.
You have your literal sword. You have seen my literal sword.
Anyway, El Cid was also a sellsword. He was born into minor nobility in Castile in around 1043, and he was in the service of the Prince of Castile, Sancho II. And when Sancho becomes king, El Cid is put in charge of the Castilian army, and he leads some campaigns against Sancho's brothers, Alfonso and Garcia, who are ruling other provinces in Christian Spain, because Sancho wanted to consolidate their kingdoms. So El Cid starts gaining renown as a great fighter, and they do expand the territory. However, in 1072, King Sancho assassinated. Mm. No one knows who did it, which means, of course, it was one of his brothers.
Probably.
And probably his brother Alfonso, who El Cid had helped depose from his own throne a few years earlier. But since Sancho had no kids, Alfonso ascends to the throne of this expanded kingdom. So basically, El Cid is now in the service of a king he actively fought against, which is frowned upon.
It makes sense that Alfonso took the throne, though.
Yeah, totally.
He was the coolest one.
He was definitely the coolest. He was, yeah.
He had the leather jacket.
He did. He always banged up against medieval jukeboxes.
Yes. Yeah.
Which were just like boxes that had little lute players inside of them. So Alfonso is in charge.
Oh, it's a Happy Days reference.
Yes, we're making jokes relevant 20 years ago, so could you please keep up?
20, mate.
Topical.
20 years ago was 2003. I hate to break it to you.
Fuck.
So we're all very old, but not as old as El Cid. El Cid loses his rank, and eventually in 1081, Alfonso exiles him from the kingdom. So he basically becomes a traveling mercenary. And he goes to Zaragoza, which was in Muslim hands at the time. And according to one chronicle, they found him, quote, thirsty and exiled. Unclear to me what sense of thirsty they meant. But regardless, they slake his thirst by giving him the opportunity to fight, and he fights for Zaragoza against Christian kingdoms like Aragon, as well as against other Muslim Taifa states. So, speaking of being thirsty, Will, this part is just for you.
Yes.
El Cid apparently loved reading books by Roman and Greek military strategists.
Normal.
Presumably nerd. Just Thucydides, day in, day out. He ordered that the books be read aloud to his troops before battle. He was also a big fan of psyops, and he would use unexpected strategies to terrorize his enemies before he attacked them.
I like this guy.
I knew you like, would.
What kind of unexpected things?
It's unclear.
It's unclear.
Yeah. It was like I didn't dig into El Cid's psyops, but I probably should have because they were probably interesting. But also, it was the 12th century, the 11th century at this point, so just like hiding behind a boulder.
Yeah, they weren't exactly doing like Russian troll farms or whatever. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, they weren't like
dank memes aimed to overthrow the.
There were a lot of dank memes, but they were just primitive in nature. And one note on his nickname, El Cid probably comes from the Arabic word Sayyid, meaning Lord. Oh. And so El Sayyid or As Sayyid, meaning the Lord, which was a title given to other Christian leaders at the time. Huh. But there's no evidence to suggest that he was actually called that during his life. And the first time it appears is in one of these epic poems that's written about him about 50 years after his death. But while he was alive, he did definitely have the title Campeador, which means master of the battlefield, which I think is
cool. It's pretty cool. It's really that is very cool. I just thought it meant the Cid.
Yeah. Well, you got half the translation right.
I mean, that's I always just
really
the Cid.
Good. Yeah. No, El Cid, the Lord, Campeador. Anyway, in 1086, this group called the Almoravids come up from North Africa, and they're people of Berber descent, and they're on a mission to reunite the Muslim Taifas and take control of the whole peninsula. King Alfonso, up in Castile and León, recognizes this threat and realizes he needs El Cid back, so he recalls him to his service. But El Cid has gotten a taste for power and independence, and he wants more than to just command dudes' armies. He wants the Christian and Muslim armies to fight each other and then weaken them both while he can just kick it and do his own thing. He wants to be in control of the Taifa of Valencia. Can't blame him. Beautiful city.
Beautiful place. Mm.
And gradually...
Great oranges.
He really loves oranges, probably.
He does strike me as a marmalade man.
That's the subtitle of the movie, right? El Cid, the Marmalade Man.
That's it. By Heston.
Gradually, he does gain control of Valencia, nominally as a vassal of King Alfonso, but really, he's ruling it independently. And he rules it as a very pluralistic society and was apparently supported by Christians and Muslims alike, which we love. He rules Valencia for about 5 years, defending it against the Almoravids, but then in 1099, he dies. His wife, Ximena, takes over after his death, but in 1102, she is forced to surrender Valencia to the Almoravids, who have been besieging the city on their quest to reunite the Muslim kingdoms. And there's a great legend that during this siege in 1102, Ximena orders El Cid's corpse to be fitted with armor and set upon his horse to boost the morale of his troops.
That is not going to boost my morale if I see the corpse of my beloved leader in armor.
Yeah. On his living horse. Does that change anything?
Over a horse.
But also, it's been 3 years. I mean, like...
Indeed, it has been 3 years.
Wow. Yeah. Oh.
But in some versions of the story, El Cid actually wins a charge against the Almoravids, despite having been famously dead for 3 years.
Do we think that's probable?
I think it's likely.
I don't think that he participated that much in it, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Well, he was the, you know, the
imagine
figurehead.
Being the guy in command of that actual tactical action, and then this fucking dead guy on a horse takes all the credit afterwards.
Imagine being in control of that horse. Yeah, like, yeah. How do you, you know, it's a lot of slumping, a lot of...
If that happened, that is 70% down to the horse.
It was a great horse. So this is El Cid's beloved war horse named Babieca, which means stupid.
It's great name for a horse.
It's a great name for a horse. There are a lot of theories about how the horse got that name, but my favorite is that El Cid's godfather was gifting El Cid a horse, and El Cid picked one that his godfather thought was a weak choice, so the godfather just yelled, Babieca! But by all accounts, Babieca was a great horse.
Yeah.
Going so far as to let his dead rider command and win a charge.
Brilliant. Excellent tactical acumen.
Yeah, exactly. Very tactically ecumenical horse. And so that's why I chose to talk about this, because 1102 is when this kingdom fell, but I wanted to give all that context of El Cid, because he's just a very great, cool, romanticized, but really actually important figure that had the skill and the valor to back it up. I have two very brief things to say as well. He had two famous swords named Tizona and Colada, not Pina. There is a legend that after El Cid died, a lot of legends about what happened to him after he died. So there is a legend that after he died, he was seated in full armor in a monastery church, a little easier than seating him on a horse.
After about being ragged about by a horse. This guy was just like...
No, they just wouldn't let him rest.
That's a lot of duct tape.
It's a lot of duct tape. But as he was propped up in this church, a man came by to pluck a hair from his beard, but Tizona, the sword, struck the man down.
So none of this happened. I mean, come on, none of this happened.
Let her finish. We don't know. It's entirely possible.
Yeah, what if the sword were connected on a string to his beard, like a little sort of Damocles situation? Or
like a little trap. Like a little trap.
And when the guy plucks the beard, it releases the sword. Which,
like Home Alone style.
Exactly. Can you allow that was possible?
I mean, it's physically possible, and it definitely didn't happen.
Well, anyway, I would love to have a sword that's faithful to me after my death, but I'm still working on it.
My sword is for her.
No comment. Of course, as Ant mentioned, El Cid has inspired lots and lots of works of art over the ages, including the movie with Charlton Heston. But also, did you know El Cid was described to inspire Fernie about his Spanish heritage in The Legend of Raloo, episode 16 of season 1 of Jakers, The Adventures of Piggly-winks?
I don't know any... Yeah, I don't understand any of that.
80% of those words I just don't know. Piggly-winks.
I know. I had to read that sentence so many times. I was like, I don't know what any of this means, but I really would like to say it out loud on a podcast.
So, two suggestions. Watch Piggly-winks.
Yep.
Or... El Cid.
Yeah. And if you're going to watch Piggly-winks, specifically watch episode 16 of season 1, The Legend of Raloo.
The Legend of Raloo. Amazing.
And that is the tale of El Cid.
Thank you. Now, at least in the UK and in Western Europe, people learn a little bit about William the Conqueror.
Mm.
But what many people don't realize is that when William was fighting the Battle of Hastings in 1066,
yep,
at home, he had a sulky teenage son called Robert. So think Seth Green's character, Scott Evil, in the Austin Powers movies.
Which is a documentary made about...
That's correct. Yeah, okay, yes, exactly. Great. Based on this character, this person, Robert. So today I'm going to talk about the sulky son of the conquering king, a guy called Robert Curtose, or Robert II of Normandy.
Seth Green.
Or Seth Green's character.
Or Scott Evil.
Or Scott Evil, yeah. So Robert was the son of William, of course, and his wife Matilda of Flanders, and she comes up a bit later. So he was born sometime between 1051 and 1053. And as a child, he was betrothed to Margaret, the heiress of Maine, with whom he had a really high level of compatibility and who was worth 5,000 gold pieces a year. But tragically, she died before they could be wed.
Oh, that's so sad for them financially.
Very sad.
And probably emotionally.
And in the end, he didn't marry at all until his late 40s, which was quite rare at the time for nobility.
Oh, so there's hope for me yet.
Yeah, I'm on track. I'm on track for that.
So in his youth, he was apparently very skillful in military exercises, but also, quote, prone to laziness and weakness of character, unquote. And it seems that all the other nobles around him and the King of France then used those character flaws to kind of stir up trouble between Robert and his dad. And then a big cause of his problems was that he was unsatisfied generally with his share of power, between him and his brothers. So he argued all the time, constantly, with his father and his brothers as a result of this. And in 1077, Robert launched his first insurrection against his father, which started as a result of a prank played by his younger brothers, William and Henry, who dumped a full chamber pot over his head. And Robert was so enraged that he started a brawl with his brothers.
Classic prank, though.
And then their brother, their father, William the Conqueror, had to physically intercede and then stop them from...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Fighting.
Don't make me come over there and conquer you. I will.
But just generally, you don't really think about William the Conqueror like having all this complicated stuff go on afterwards.
Yeah,
right?
Or like being the like patriarch of a sitcom with like all his, you know.
You just picture him like weaving a big tapestry for the rest of his days. That's it, really. That's...
Also, the chamber pot over the head is the 11th century equivalent of cling film on the toilet seat, do we think? Do you guys do that one?
Nope.
Nope.
Oh.
Not barbaric.
Okay, well, I'll save my pranks for another day.
I think partly because I would then have to respond how Robert responds now. So basically, feeling that his dignity was wounded by this whole thing, Robert was then even more angry when King William failed then to punish the brothers for doing the chamber pot thing. So the next day, and I really, really admire how quickly he escalates here, Robert and his followers set out in an attempt to seize the castle of Rouen, and the siege failed. But when King William ordered their arrest, Robert then fled to Flanders to the court of his uncle. So he went from chamber pot to try to seize a major castle.
Yeah. Chamber pot to castle.
To run 24 hours.
How old was he at this point?
He is like 25.
Okay. So he's not like 12.
No.
It's quite juvenile then of his brothers to chamber pot.
I mean, I remember back in the day when I used to try and seize castles when I was slighted.
Yeah. When that girl turned you down for...
Yeah. I'll take her castle.
And at this point, he's basically in for a penny, in for a pound. So he starts plundering the county of Vexin and it causes so much mayhem that his father, King William, had to then ally himself with King Philip of France to try and stop his son.
Wow.
And relations weren't helped again when William discovered that his wife, Matilda, was secretly sending Robert money to support him.
That's classic.
So, and then at a battle in 1079, Robert then unhorsed King William, his father, in combat. And succeeded in wounding him, and he only stopped his attack when he recognized his father's voice from inside the armor of this knight that he just thought was just any old knight fighting. And so King William was completely humiliated by this, being unhorsed by his son.
Well, as we've learned, being unhorsed, there's no greater indignity.
There completely right,
except for a chamber pot.
Except
possibly.
For a chamber pot over your head.
And he basically left Robert to it for a year, and then the following year in 1080, they were slightly reconciled by the efforts of Matilda to try and bring them back together. And that lasted for about another 3 years. But then Matilda died at that point. Yeah. Mm. And so Robert again seems to have left court as soon as his mother died, pretty much. And then spent several years just traveling aimlessly around France and Germany and Flanders. And it was in this period that he was another wandering knight. Mm. Really his only big achievement during this time, if you can call it an achievement, was that he produced several illegitimate children.
Well, he really doesn't seem the type. He seems so responsible and measured.
And then in 1087, his father, King William, died of wounds from a riding accident. And at his father's death, he reportedly wanted to disinherit Robert completely, but was persuaded to divide the Norman dominions between his two eldest sons. So Robert got the Duchy of Normandy and William Rufus, the other son, became William II, King of England. And then at that time of their father's death, the two brothers made an agreement to be each other's heir to their to their respective kingdoms, which lasted it only lasted a year, and it only it lasted just that that limited amount of time because it took Robert that long to try to plot a rebellion with against his brother with the barons of England.
This guy.
And so that was the rebellion of 1088, which was then instigated by Robert, and that then failed because Robert then never showed up for the battle.
I love this guy so much. He's so incompetent.
Terrible. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like so bitter and like rageful, but has, also quite incompetent.
Yeah. He's so much hatred in his heart, but like no follow through. No
commitment. Exactly. So without much idea of what to do next, in 1096, Robert did what any sensible noble of the time would do during their midlife crisis.
Seize a castle.
Go on crusade.
Go on crusade. Ah. Yes. He raised an army and joined the first crusade. And he was forced to raise money for this crusade and for his efforts in it by mortgaging his duchy to his brother William, so he had to mortgage the whole thing off to get enough money for it, and he had a decent amount of success actually on the crusade. So he went on to help to conquer Nicaea in 1097 and then was part of the force that took Jerusalem in 1099, and he ended up leaving the Holy Land around September that year in 1099 and returned via Constantinople and then to southern Italy, where he married a woman called Sibylle, who helped him by bringing with her a big dowry, which he then used to buy back his duchy from, from his brother.
Okay, all right.
And it was all going quite well. But then at that stage, his brother, William, who was currently King of England, died while Robert was still on his way back from the Holy Land.
Okay.
And so the younger brother...
So like called home a bunch of times and he didn't answer.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the younger, the other brother of the chamber pot story, Henry, was then able to use the moment to seize the crown for himself.
Wow.
And then eventually in 1105, Robert was being such a pain still in Normandy that Henry, who's now on the throne in England, then just had to invade Normandy to try and do something about him.
Wow.
So these are lands his like father was ruling and that should have been completely, you know, on his side. So then in 1106, Henry defeated Robert's army in Normandy and took Normandy as a possession of the English crown, which is still a claim that is recognised amongst all right-thinking people. And Robert was imprisoned then at Devizes Castle in Wiltshire.
Finally.
For 20 years.
Oh, wow.
And I kind of, I do respect Henry's resolve here of finally doing something about this dude. It's like, right, you're getting into a castle, you're going to stay there. So he was 20 years in Devizes Castle, and then finally, and then he was moved to Cardiff, and then in 1134, he died in Cardiff Castle in his early 80s.
I mean, yeah, I was going to say, I feel like he's been causing shenanigans for a long time.
Yeah, at least seven decades of active shenanigizing.
He had so many opportunities to die, and he probably would have had he bothered to show up for any of his revenge plans.
He's amazing. So there you have it. That's the sulky son of William the Conqueror, who I have to admit, I quite like the guy, despite all of that.
I mean, he sounds
got
like
some
a
style.
Real worm tongue, kind of sniveling kind of guy.
I thought maybe we were headed for a redemption arc with the crusade and coming back and getting married.
No, he just dies in prison.
He's just still a little shit.
There are no happy endings in history, as we come to understand. I'm going to be talking about sort of crusade season, which effectively we're in the height of now in 1102.
In March 2023.
Exactly. In March 2023 is the height of crusade season. I hope everyone's ready. They got their SPF and
got
all that
their,
kind of stuff.
Crusade body ready.
So the first crusade took place from 1096 to 1099. And this was instigated by the church, who decided, hey, we kind of want to get the Holy Land back from Islamic rule. And this was kicked off in earnest by the Byzantines, who sort of, you know, took that mantle upon them as being the first crusaders after Pope Urban II proclaimed it. And this sort of instigated this romantic notion, idea of taking back the Holy Land. And it was successful in large parts in the start, where they established the Kingdom of Jerusalem. So everyone wanted a piece of the action. And you can sort of imagine from the point of view from the Islamic side, they're like, what the fuck are you guys doing? We just, like, we've been living here for centuries now.
Yeah.
What are you doing? So
1002, Jerusalem was in the hands of Western Knights, sorry, 1102, sorry, oh, in yeah, Western okay. Knights. And they made this kingdom of Jerusalem, and it was headed up by a chap called King Baldwin the First,
mm-hmm.
who was originally one of the lesser known Baldwins. So originally a count from Edessa in modern day southeast Turkey. He took the seat after crusading for quite some time. He was in the original Crusades, and he's extremely successful, tactically astute, you know, lots of cavalry, all that kind of good stuff we think about Crusades.
A lot of white tunics with red crosses.
Well, that would specifically be the Templars.
And the chainmail arms.
Yeah, these are more like multicolored spandex, I think, or something like that. You know, they're all different types. Yeah,
Baldwin first, the Lycra King.
The Lycra King.
Don't stereotype Crusaders.
Exactly. Oh, I'm so sorry.
However, on the other hand, the Fatimids were not at all happy about this. Mm-hmm. They were the ones that were chased out of Jerusalem in the first place. And at the head of it was the Egyptian vizier, great rank. I hope someday to be a vizier.
Oh, yeah. Oh, just Jafar vibes. One.
Oh, amazing. To twirl my goatee.
Hot.
It'd be great. So this Egyptian vizier called Al-Afdal.
Al-Afdal. Sorry, I'm still not clear what his name is.
How many Al's was that?
One Al, one Afdal.
Al-Afdal.
Al-Afdal, yes.
Okay.
So the capture of Jerusalem prompted the Fatimid Caliphate to seek the restoration of their rule over the region. The struggle for control over Palestine between these two forces would give rise to a rather significant battle, which is what we're going to talk about today. But there's actually two battles here that happened 1 year apart. And it's the Battle of Ramla. The first one happened in 1101. In about May time, and in the preceding months, King Baldwin the First had embarked in a series of raids establishing his territory against the Fatimids, and he successfully captured territories and strongholds. And then in response, the Fatimid vizier Al-Afdal amassed a really large army, like pretty big, estimated around 20,000 soldiers to march towards Jerusalem in an attempt to recapture the city. Of course, Ramla is sort of in the way, so there's a good place for meeting these armies. As the Fatimid forces approaches, Baldwin I quickly assembled his army, which was significantly smaller than the Fatimids, numbering only about 1,000 knights, heavy cavalry, heavy horses, and 1,000 infantrymen.
Don't body shame the horses like that.
Yeah, the difference between heavy cavalry and light cavalry is just like, they're just bigger guys. It's just oats and squats or whatever. Yeah.
Oats and squats, classic.
So despite the numerical disadvantage, Baldwin decided to confront the enemy in open field and just charge at them effectively. And he was kind of banking on their discipline and experience of his knights would compensate for the massive number difference between the two. And also the fact they had heavy cavalry to do most of the damage. And it worked. They managed to overcome the odds in spite of being totally encircled because they broke through the line and then they were in amongst the Fatimids and just caused chaos there and they all fled. And
this was the first battle.
The first battle
in 1101.
And exactly. Okay. And so King Baldwin the First, and lo, there was peace in the Middle East ever since then.
For millennium since.
For one year.
Okay. Well.
So 1102, year in question, we get to the second battle of Ramla.
Okay.
Which is, the aftermath of this, you know, there's a changing of the guard. Effectively, the Fatimid Caliphate were still determined to regain control over Jerusalem and the territories there, and they assembled a new army to challenge the Crusaders. This time, they were Al-Afdal was out, and his son was in, Sharaf al-Malali. Mm. So he was in command instead, and they had managed to learn a lot of lessons from the previous one. And King oats and squats. They were on bulk season was happening. They were bulking big time.
Yeah.
So King Baldwin once again mobilized his forces to meet the enemy near Ramla. And the Crusader army now, however, was smaller than it once been when it fought previously because some of the knights had returned to Europe. Reinforcements had not yet arrived. The Fatimid army, on the other hand, were really well prepared and they had really studied their defeat from previous and made them just a more formidable adversary.
Yeah.
So how did it go? The second battle of Ramla began with both armies engaging in skirmishes, maneuvers,
testing each other's strength, that, you know, classic sort of early flirtations of war.
With like tug of war. Tug of war.
There's like a hammer throwing contest. Okay. Yeah. Shot put. It was kind of like a track and field day, you know, like school athletics.
Spoon and egg race. Spoon and egg. Pie eating contest.
So after all that, the Crusaders were once again confident in their victory, having got the experience in the previous year, launched a really bold attack, trying to punch through the lines. And initially it looked pretty good. Looks like they had under control. But due to the fact that the Fatimids just were able to just engage in this battle of attrition and just wear them down, no matter what lines they broke through, there was yet another line to go through. The Fatimids also learned how to sort of counter the heavy cavalry because they started aggressively targeting them with archers, and then they armed the infantry in deep lines of infantry with long pikes and stuff so that the cavalry couldn't flank and they couldn't charge the lines. And they also... They put their forces into smaller light cavalry units. So the cavalry units, rather than being big blocks, they had very small forces and many pronged sort of skirmishing hit raids into the lines. So the end of all this, Baldwin had to retreat.
Mm.
So his forces were dwindled down and a lot of his knights were killed or captured and then killed. but he only made it out with a handful of them surviving, so had to go with his tail between his legs.
Strong hands to carry that many troops.
And in the years following the Second Battle of Ramla, you know, the Crusaders and the Fatimid Caliphate, you know, there was continued struggle for dominance of the Holy Land. The Fatimids didn't quite make it into Jerusalem. It's still, you know, Wild West territory of things going back and forth, but the Kingdom of Jerusalem did survive. And they held on to their territories, and they actually even expanded their influence in the area in many ways, but with this persistent sort of threat from the Fatimids. And, you know, the Second Battle of Ramla really is kind of just shows just how kind of fraught this area was, that no matter how big your force was or how much you took it for granted, you're just like one 20,000 group of people away from being defeated.
Isn't that always the case?
Yeah.
Every time I get so close and then there's just 20,000 people in my way.
But the Kingdom of Jerusalem did last for 200 years.
Yeah.
So it went on until 1291.
Oh, wow.
So right by the time when Robin Hood escaped and came back to England.
That's right. I remember that from
King of Thieves.
Robin Hood. Prince of Thieves. Men in Tights.
Men in Tights. Yeah, exactly.
But it's not always in Christian hands, I don't think.
No, it's not.
1187 Saladin and
yes,
stuff.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And there is like there's peaks and troughs and stuff. Yeah. And like, you know, what does that mean, the Kingdom of Jerusalem is a kind of continuous, you know, integral sort of entity really, rather than just like maybe some lines on a map that sort of do change rapidly all the time.
I'm waiting for you to make, Will, the reference that I know you want to make.
I will not bring that film up again.
Okay.
That's
good.
Kingdom of Heaven.
you've been oddly quiet. I assume you've just been playing out your favorite scenes in your head.
Look, I know you think it's not one of the top three films ever made.
I think it's great. I just also
it's
don't think
it's... top three. It's Kingdom of Heaven, El Cid, and what's that one? Rattlers or whatever it was.
Piggly Winks.
Piggly Winks. Top three.
Is Eva Green in Piggly Winks?
I think she is, yeah.
Yeah, she's in that episode, yeah.
Well, there you go. 1102, definitely Battle of Ramla.
Amazing. Crusades, truculent sons, battle masters. 1102.
Oranges.
Oranges. And Piggly Winks. All right, thanks for joining us. That's everything you'd ever need to know about the year 1102.
That's it. So all that's left to do, as is tradition, Will, please light the incense, set off the fireworks, get the searchlight that's got that thing that's shaped in the shape of a random number. And
it's a fascinating piece of technology that the searchlight changes.
Multimodal, I would say, is what it is. Could you please boot up the random number generator and give us the next year?
I absolutely can. And the searchlights are slotting into place. And in the sky above us, I can see
the bat symbol.
The symbols.
We'll have to interpret them.
And next week's year is 1917.
Aha.
Ooh.
Modern era.
Oh,
what's going on?
I know I joke and say one of the greats all the time, but 1917 is objectively an incredibly important year in history.
Dense.
Dense. Rich. Dense with stuff.
Creamy.
Creamy and dense.
Like a nutritious, active bacteria yogurt.
Some
of history. It's possible that I'm hungry.
I think I'm hungry. I was just thinking that too. Do you know what I'd love? A beef right. Wellington. I've got a very specific urge for a beef Wellington.
All right, we're going to go eat beef Wellington and learn something about the year 1917.
Brilliant. See you next week.
Bye. Bye.
Toodles.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.